Hey guys, welcome to It's a Vet Tech Life. I'm Megan, and I'm your co-host along with
Sheena, with Not Another Vet Nurse.
And we are here to bring you vet information and client information for your pet, and also for all of the people in the wonderful veterinary medicine community. We are here to be your support system, and we want nothing more than to be able to reach out and help you back. So, if you're ready, let's get started on another episode.
Let's do it.
So, with everything going on in Australia and the horrible damage to wildlife and all of the animals living there, and also the fact that I live in a state prone to hurricanes. Sheena lives in a state prone to forest fires.
Yeah. Yep.
We decided it would be really, really important to do a segment on disaster prepping for your pets and also helping pets during a disaster. We all know pet owners want to do what's best for their pets in case of a disaster. So, for reasons related to health and space, pets aren't allowed in public emergency shelters, unfortunately, including those run by the American Red Cross. The shelter must follow certain regulations, and not allowing pets is one of them. You can make arrangements, though, and planning ahead for those arrangements will make difficult times easier. Worst case scenario, leaving your pets at home can usually be avoided. In most states in the U.S., service, guide, and hearing dogs are allowed to stay in emergency shelters with their owners. If you have one of these dogs, check with your local emergency management officials before disaster hit. So do not wait until you see the eye of the storm and be like, hey, yo, emergency center, can my pup come?
Yeah, they're going to tell you no.
Don't do that.
Mm-mm.
The Humane Society of the United States, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the American Red Cross all work together during disasters, and the agencies agree that you should keep your pets with you if at all possible, and agree that if your home isn't safe for you, it isn't safe for your pets. So the HSUS recommends that you put together a disaster supply kit packed in a waterproof container for your pets. The container should have 3 days to a week's worth of food and include water, medications, veterinary records, leashes or harnesses, a current photo of your pets for identification purposes, paper towels, litter pan and litter if you have a cat, sealable plastic bags, and an extra leash and collar. Use a flip-top canned food or include a can opener. Place the photos in a sealable plastic bag. These items will be of use whether you evacuate or are in a sheltered place. If your pet has medication that must be kept cool, keep the medication in one of the sealable plastic bags and ice it with ice from the Red Cross. The HSUS recommends also that you have a carrier for each one of your pets. Replace the food in your disaster kit on a regular basis so that it does not spoil. Temporary paper bags from an office supply store can be used as an alternative to identification tags. Temporary paper bags from an office supply store can be used as alternative identification tags could be useful if you need to put a relative's phone number on the pet. The Cat Fanciers Association recommends that if you have to confine cats for a long period of time, have a carrier large enough to hold a shoe-sized litter box, a water and food dish, and room for the cats to comfortably lie down. Ensure that the carrier is properly ventilated and not left in the sun. The association also says that if you must take the cat out, do so in a confined space as the cat may try to run away. Generally, with cats and opening a door, we have a runner.
I mean, I feel like that also applies to, like, dogs as well, though. Like, you don't want to...
Yeah, if they're scared.
Like, a small dog or... Yeah. So, not just cats, but yeah.
If you choose to shelter your pet in your own place, keep an eye on their whereabouts in case you need to evacuate. It's best to bring them inside. Some animals will hide during severe weather changes, so bring them inside early and leash them when they are outside with you. Keep plastic bags and newspapers inside to clean up pet waste.
Having a buddy system in place before the disaster strikes is always helpful, particularly if you are not at home when the disaster hits, but your pets are. The buddy system allows a neighbor to have access to your home so your pets can be fed or removed by your neighbor. You can do the same for them. If you need to evacuate, bring your pets with you, even if you think that you'll only be gone for a few hours. The severity of disasters can change quickly, and you may not be allowed to go back to your home to get them. It will help calm your pet if you bring a favorite blanket or toys. Evacuating will be much easier if you already know in advance where you can go. Both the HSUS and FEMA suggest you contact hotels and motels outside your area so that you know which ones accept pets. Ask in advance about any restrictions on number, size, and species. Also ask if no pet policies are waived in an emergency. Make a list of the places you can go to and keep it with your emergency phone numbers. Include area kennels on your list. Call ahead for a reservation as soon as you think you may have to leave your home. Some local animal shelters allow pets to stay there during an emergency. Find out in advance if yours does. Shelters have limited resources and space, and their energies will be elsewhere during an emergency, so use this as your last resort. FEMA urges people to leave early and not wait for a mandatory evacuation order. If you delay leaving until emergency officials insist upon it, you may be told to leave your pets behind in a formal evacuation. And I would like to see them make me try and not go get my dog.
Please, I will shove that dog in a purse and we'll look. Let's go.
Yeah, thankfully you have a little dog.
Yeah, but when my purse starts growling, it might get a little suspicious.
Oh, that's funny.
You're like, you know what? My purse, it just does that.
Unfortunately, there are times when no matter how solid your plans are, the specifics of the emergency dictate that your pets must remain at home. If your dog normally wears a chain link choke collar, which it better not because I hate those, have a leather or nylon collar available if you have to leave the dog alone for several days. FEMA suggests that you leave a 2 or 3 day supply of dry food, even if it's not the pet's usual food. Don't moisten the food. Leave the food in a sturdy container that the pet cannot overturn. Good luck with my dog. Leave water in the no-spill container. If possible, open a faucet slightly and let the water drip into a big container. Large dogs may be able to obtain fresh water from a partially filled bathtub. Leave the pets in the safest room in the house, such as basement or bathroom.
So, what if you don't have dog or cat? If you have a bird, the American Red Cross suggests that birds be transported in a secure travel cage or carrier. In cold weather, wrap a blanket over the carrier and warm up the car before placing the bird inside. During warm weather, carry a plant mister to mist the bird's feathers periodically. Do not put water inside the carrier during transport. Put some fresh fruits and vegetables with high water content in the carrier instead. Have a photo for identification and leg bands. If the carrier doesn't have a perch, line it with paper towels and change them frequently. Don't let the birds out of the cage or the carrier. That seems like a very important, but common sense rule, but I will go ahead and state that anyways.
You never know. And of course, if you have reptiles,
oh god,
yeah, that would be my first response. Snakes can be transported in a pillowcase, but they must
better be one thick behind pillowcase.
I know, right? But they must be transferred to more secure housing when they reach the evacuation site. If your snakes require frequent feedings, carry food with you. I'm sorry, does that mean you have to carry a bunch of dead mice?
Excuse me, no thanks.
I don't know about that. Take a water bowl large enough for soaking as well as a heating pad.
I'm sorry, I have a phobia of snakes.
When transporting house lizards, follow the same directions as the birds. And then for more information, you can see the emergency planning for reptile and amphibian collections. And we can always link that in the show notes.
Definitely. I can link that for you guys. I will suffer through having to look at a picture just because I love her that much.
There you go.
All for you guys.
Yes.
I'm serious. Your girl has a phobia. Yeah. I used to have nightmares about these things.
I'm not a fan either.
If you have pocket pets, like small mammals, hamsters, gerbils, dwarf hamsters, guinea pigs, whatever, they should be transported in secure carriers suitable for maintaining the animals while sheltered. You need to take bedding materials, food bowls, and water. And that's about it for those little guys. They're pretty simple.
The only other thing, and I just thought about this randomly, but is like rabbits and those got in hamsters, they have to have stuff to chew their food or to grind their teeth down. So maybe like
that's
their little
too.
Chew blocks or, you know, whatever you can grab. Of course, that depends on the situation, but that's important.
And there's also livestock and horses on here, but there's literally one sentence, but I will read it anyway. Livestock and horses have specific disaster needs that must be planned for in advance. So if you have livestock or a horse, you better start planning.
Yeah. The day you bought it.
Yeah. Like, know this stuff before you buy.
Mm-hmm.
We've previously talked about caring for animals during a disaster and preparing for disasters with animals. We have previously talked about disaster prepping for your pet. And another important thing we really want to touch on is how you can help animals during a disaster. So the most important thing you can do to help animals during a disaster is be sure that you have prepared appropriate emergency kits for yourself, your human family, and the animals in your care. This should be done well in advance of an emergency incident. Be sure to include medications as well as vaccination records, food, water, bedding, leash, and water bowls and food bowls, plastic bags and gloves for waste, a first aid kit, and an appropriate cage or kennel for each animal. And don't forget the kitty litter in a small pan. Most importantly, you really should ask your veterinarian to implant a microchip in your pet for positive identification and register the chip number with one of the national organizations available for that purpose. You should also carry that microchip identification number in your wallet along with a picture of yourself with the pet. Write the chip number on the back of the photo and slide that photo into a sleeve along with the pictures of your kids and your grandkids and, you know, your aunts and uncles and all those people.
Was this written? Oh, yep. This was written long before cell phones. So we obviously all have pets that are photos of our pets on our phone.
But so in the event that you are in like a shelter and cannot charge a cell phone, this is a good idea.
Very true. Very true.
But she does have a point.
You should carry proof of your residential address in your wallet so that you can get home if first level roadblocks are in force or on your phone. But if you can't charge it, then obviously having, if you don't know your address, I guess. Evacuate humans and animals in a timely manner. Know what motels, friends, relatives, or pet-friendly shelters might be able to accommodate you and your pets. Call as soon as possible to reserve a spot. Have a friend or relative in another area act as the information clearinghouse for you in case disaster strikes, local communications, hence your cell phone. If you have horses but no trailer, realize that you will need to be willing to evacuate very early in order for friends to be able to trailer your horses for you. Being personally prepared not only helps your own animals, this frees up disaster service workers who might otherwise be spending time and effort saving you and yours. So, of course, they could be helping other people as well.
Once you're safe and everybody around you and your loved ones are safe, you may decide that you want to help neighbors and others if your own area is hit by a disaster. It is best to plan ahead for this as well. Most locals will be requiring disaster volunteers to have some prior training, proper disaster worker identification, and association with response agencies deployed to that disaster. There are simply too many safety issues when people without prior training or experience volunteer after a disaster has hit. There are plenty of positions to be filled within disaster response agencies, so you'll want to think about how your particular skills and interests might be useful. Such qualifications as professional degrees in counseling, accounting, medicine, or law are valuable assets. Prior experience in actual disaster response is kind of helpful too, but you know, hopefully a lot of people don't have that prior experience.
Yeah, that's something you don't want to experience in.
That's something you don't want to have to put on your resume.
No.
But there are other ways to help behind the front lines, making phone calls, arranging for supplies, keeping track of donations, scheduling volunteers, or even entering data onto the website. Your physical health may influence what positions are appropriate for you. If you have a significant health problem, you may not be able to help at the front line where amenities are minimal and physical stresses are often well beyond the norms. But there are ways you can help behind the front lines too, making phone calls, arranging for supplies, keeping track of donations, scheduling volunteers, or entering data onto the website. Perhaps if you have a laptop, you could be stationed at the Red Cross shelter to help people access websites in search of their displaced pet. If you're an experienced groomer, you are ahead of the crowd in helping to decontaminate animals exposed to toxic floodwaters or oil spills. If you're a trainer, you might want to offer help to animals that are developing behavioral issues secondary to the trauma they've experienced. You can also consider volunteering now with your local animal shelter and staying on top of things as to how to help with all the extra work during a disaster. Animal shelters all across the United States took in hurricane victims back in 2005. Like literally all across the U.S., even though it hit that one location, they were still taking them in because it ended up being that widespread.
Wow.
And I believe they're referring to Katrina.
Yeah.
Based on the year.
Yeah, I would assume that as well.
But if you have skills in public speaking, you may actually find yourself as a public information officer, a community educator, or a funding director. Massage therapists are greatly appreciated by humans and animals alike during an evacuation. Perhaps your own home may not have been affected. If this is the case, you may be able to foster care for animals displaced by the disaster while their families get resettled. Not everyone who volunteers at the front lines will be heroically sloshing through floodwaters looking for stranded animals. There will always be tremendous need for workers to clean the animal housing units, feed the animals, assist disaster victims looking for their displaced animals, schedule workers, organize supplies, things like that. These are usually positions for those in robust health who are capable of dealing with life at the scene without amenities. The best way to start is to volunteer with a local responder group first. For more information on this type of group, you can read through a first responder's guide to animal care. If for some reason you are not physically able to volunteer in person, you could even think about funding the work of local or national organizations that will help meet the needs of these animals during disasters. Another thing you could consider is donating to a disaster response program at your state's veterinary school, to the nonprofit foundation of the AVMA, or to your state's own veterinary medical association, to your local Red Cross, earmarked for co-shelters open to those wishing to keep their pets with the owners, or perhaps even the Salvation Army, as they are often the ones to feed first responder groups as well as disaster victims. We all know that there's going to be hurricanes, wildfires, earthquakes, and other disasters in the future as they are blazing and going on right now as we record this episode. So I guess the question left is, how are you going to help? Thank you all for listening to another episode of It's a Vet Tech's Life.
If you want to reach out and be on the show or have your voice heard, you can reach out to us online.
If you don't have a particular story to tell but would like us to cover a topic, we are here for that as well.
You can reach out to us by our Facebook groups on Twitter at Megan Noel Pod, P-O-D. You can reach Megan on Instagram at The Megan Noel or at Megan Noel Podcasts. In addition, you can find me at Not Another Vet Nurse, and it's going to be at Humbert Sheena, HumbertSheena, for my personal account.
Thank you guys so much, and we appreciate you tuning in week after week.